So am I still waiting, waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god. Wait. Okay. Bow Wow.
What is Bow Wow? What is it called?
Jay
Wow.
Please give me your Herbie Hancock on these jugs.
Your Herbie. Leave me alone.
On my jugs.
Eric, I don't have a pen. I don't have a pen.
You're
right now.
And up. Please leave.
I don't have a pen.
We're looking for cookies.
I've been waiting my whole life to ask you this.
Cookies.
What's that?
Am I a gorilla? Am I a gorilla?
Oh.
Am I a gorilla? Okay, I'll be a chimp. I'll be a chimp. I'll be your chimp. I'm your chimp.
Girl, I'm
I can
sorry.
Be a chimp.
I'm
I can
sorry,
be a chimp.
Girl.
Who is this
chimp.
Guy?
I'll be a chimp. Hey, wait.
Shirt back on.
Great. It just got even better.
Awesome.
Congratulations
oh,
to you.
Look who it is.
Hi. Mrs.
Me.
Wow. Mr. Jordan. Mr. Jordan. Mrs. Wow.
Hello.
Hey, wait.
You look absolutely fabulous. You know what? I would love to put my lollipop in your mouth.
Excuse me,
PG. Don't do it.
Oh, girl.
I love yellow.
That's sweet. You're.
No.
That's my girl. Come on, baby.
Come on.
Next time. That's not
next. You're embarrassing yourself and us. Please stop it now.
Give me on Dancing with the Stars. I'll show you my moves. I'll show you my moves.
Yours sucks.
So I got my boots on. Got the right amount of leather. And I'm doing me up with a black color liner.
Welcome to Review Away, everybody. I am John Pollock, along with Wei Ting. And I know what a lot of you are thinking is, why did we just hear a clip of JWoww appearing on TNA Impact off of the top right there, Wei? And yes, we are going to be reviewing In Your House Buried Alive, but I thought, Wei, that I didn't want to wait till Tuesday because it's going to be old news by then. It's already Sunday, and I want to get your thoughts on JWoww's appearance on TNA Impact on Thursday night. And let me preface by saying, I enjoyed Impact quite a lot on Thursday night.
You know what? This was the first time I actually sat down to watch a full hour of TNA Impact ever since...
full hour? It's 2 hours. Wait.
Well, I didn't stick around for 2 hours. But I watched the first hour, and it was my first episode watching with the new way that they're shooting the backstage promos now.
Yes.
And
they're less annoying than they were at one point where that was constant.
And I didn't mind it. I enjoyed it. I think they
You enjoyed the show or you enjoyed the JWoww angle?
No, I meant I enjoyed those backstage promos particular and the way they shot them. I think it's a little too shaky at times. That's the only part that really gets to me. But as far as just the idea behind just snooping in on a backstage conversation, documentary style, I think it works for me, actually. And the performances were really good, too, actually, on TNA.
I thought a lot of people had really good performances on Thursday night. I thought Eric Bischoff was solid on the show as his heel that has taken the show over. I thought that Hulk Hogan, I don't know if they tweaked the audience, but they were definitely into Hogan and Bischoff as heels. I thought those two really worked together. That was by far Dixie Carter's best performance on Impact.
Yeah, I thought she was very good.
She was great in that backstage segment. I thought that was really well done. Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett, I thought they really, if you were not an internet fan, you would have no clue what these two were referencing in discussing Karen Angle.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about that.
Kurt actually said, "You can have that slut."
Yeah. I mean,
that was quite the statement.
The live audience knew exactly what they were talking about, but that's
you have to be an inside fan to know the story.
True, true. But in this day and age, don't you think most of the audience would be a hardcore fan?
I think that's doing a lot of assumption.
Yeah,
I take it as the person that's just maybe tuning in, especially for this night where you had promoted this around JWoww, where you might have some first-time viewers.
That's true.
You want to get these people to come back and watch your show next week, even if JWoww isn't coming back. And That is where I thought they failed spectacularly with that segment. I don't know why it went in the second hour. I don't know why you advertised the fact that Jersey Shore is on MTV right now, where you can watch the actual show. So, and I don't know why they just – it was just a complete blow-off in one segment. Yeah. To me, I would have done it much differently.
Going into this event, we had already known that the segment was taped in the second hour. But there was so much talk about this show going head-to-head with the Jersey Shore that we almost – I personally, at least, I just assumed that they – would
taped it out of order.
Taped it out of order and would rejig it afterwards to...
Which they could have. It was a pretty much standalone segment. Yeah, you could have inserted it anywhere.
To have the segment lead up into the Jersey Shore, but I was pretty shocked when they left it as it was and they had
to go
head-to-head.
Get the narrative, like 10:45 or something?
Something like that.
Oh, I just thought that was... Like, what was the point of trying to get... all these eyeballs that are going to be divided. Why not you go for their undivided attention?
They even, like JWoww herself, even on her Twitter, would tell people to only watch the first hour of the show.
Oh.
And then switch to the second hour. Because she herself was told that her segment would air only in the first hour and that she wouldn't be competing with her actual show on MTV. You got to figure that she's probably not happy about that, and MTV's probably not happy about that, that their own character would go on a different competing show at the same time on a different channel.
That was probably a Spike call, or it could have been a TNA call. No, it would have to have been Spike, because Spike had to have been aware of where that segment was airing. Like, they did so much promotion behind that, they had to have known where is the best place.
I don't know.
Oh, I'm positive Spike would have been aware.
I feel like that's something maybe TNA went ahead and did by themselves, at least as you know, as far as booking of the actual show goes. And then TNA just saw how much press they were getting. And Spike just went ahead and saw how much press they were getting outside, and they just went ahead and started promoting it on their show.
Wow, I thought it was completely foolish. And you really didn't build to anything of her coming back or doing anything in the future, which even if she wasn't coming back, I just think it would have been more beneficial to Robbie E and Cookie if you like actually had JWoww endorse these two and put them over rather than you just come out and do like some catfight spot and then that's it. You're no further ahead.
Yeah, I mean we discussed this earlier, but it's weird because JWoww gets a babyface reaction being a celebrity and everything, and here you have The Shore that you're trying to promote as a big heel group. But it just all came across as another comedy angle to me. I think they wanted that big slap there, like that Mike Tyson moment, to make a comparison. Yeah. Like that Mike Tyson moment with Steve Austin. But
Tyson is like the ultimate like best celebrity angle, or at least one of, in company history.
That worked so well.
Where it wasn't just Tyson showed up one night, shoved Austin, and that it built to a pay-per-view, and the product was so hot at the time that those new people that were sampling it stuck around after WrestleMania when Tyson was gone. And with this, you know, TNA is going to say, look how much publicity we got. Well, what does it matter if this week's rating is up slightly? They do a 1-3, and then next week they're back to a 1-1, and there's no holdover pattern from anybody sampling it. That's why, you know, it's not so much the volume of publicity, but the value of the publicity you get. What is the tangible gain you get out of all this? I mean, they're going to be featured in Entertainment Weekly next week with this angle. So, I mean, it's probably the most promotion they have ever gotten for a celebrity.
Sure, absolutely.
And it's just a case of how are you going to maximize this and keep these eyeballs on the product.
Yeah. Speaking as somebody who doesn't watch TNA regularly, it got me to watch the show.
So there you go. That's a perfect example.
But it does not make me interested in seeing this Shore thing. It's just another comedy angle. It did get me to watch your first whole hour, though, with the whole Immortal group and all that. So now they got me tuned into all that stuff. So at least I know that.
The positive was that I would say 75% of Impact was a pretty good show on Thursday. Yeah. And outside of that and that women's title change, I mean, you can't really... I thought the promo work was really good on Thursday, and that's where TNA really does excel right now because they have guys that are really good promos.
It's all promos. The whole first hour was
I had no problem with that, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
neither.
I don't... if you don't have, you don't have to have 2 hours of matches. I'm bored with that.
I agree.
If the stuff is good, then I'm fine with it. And I found the first hour to be pretty much very good.
I just think it's, I just found it really comical though, because I was watching that Jeff, Jarrett, Kurt Angle segment, and I just, the only thing I could think of was the South Park episode where you had, they were like, you know, talking about how you took my job, you stole my wife, and it was the exact same promo.
You can have that slut.
Yeah, it was the same, exact same promo that these two were cutting on
each
other.
Can you imagine being one of Kurt's kids and watching your dad call your mom a slut on television for a storyline?
Sure, well, those kids
They censored slut. But they allowed Dixie to say shit.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah.
Those kids will be pretty messed up regardless. But I just, what are we watching here? We're watching bodybuilders try to act. We're watching bodybuilders perform theater. That's what I saw a full hour of on Thursday night.
I thought most of the promos were pretty good from the people we mentioned.
Sure.
I wasn't complaining about it. All right, we're here for the task at hand, everyone, and that's In Your House, Buried Alive, from October the 20th, 1996. 14 years ago, everybody, when the NWO had just kicked off, much like it just has today in 2010.
Right.
This one took place at the Market Square Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana, and our announcers for tonight are Vince McMahon, Jerry Lawler, and kind of Jim Ross, who at this point had just introduced the fake Diesel and fake Razor Ramon and was trying to be a heel who was
bitter.
His gimmick was he was a bitter announcer.
Bitter about the treatment that the WWE had given him over his last few years as an employee, being fired multiple times.
Yes, and Vince McMahon, at this point, everyone, was the campiest babyface announcer. He was like your grandfather calling wrestling, like a completely different character than what he became years later.
Mm-hmm.
So we kick off the show away with Steve Austin against Triple H.
Yeah, this music came on, and I had no clue who this music was for. And turns out Hunter Hearst Helmsley walks out to the arena.
Much smaller Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Yes, a very thin Hunter Hearst Helmsley walks out, along with the Valley of the Week.
And he's replacing an injured Savio Vega, who was supposed to be wrestling Steve Austin. So Steve Austin and Savio Vega was scheduled to be the curtain jerker on this In Your House pay-per-view
in
1996. It was just amazing that your biggest pay-per-view draw in history at one point was opening the show with Savio Vega.
Yeah, they worked the whole program together.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Anyway, Triple H versus Austin.
Yeah, we go to Kevin Kelly backstage with Austin, who says that Bret Hart's announcement tomorrow night better be his retirement speech, or he will retire him, and says everyone can kiss his ass. And he refers to Triple H as Hunter Hearst. I'm going to take care of Hunter Hearst tonight.
Austin really stuck out for me here, because here he was, this guy who we identify so well with the Attitude Era. Here he is in the middle of this still very cartoonish world. Yeah, like you have Hunter Hearst Helmsley coming out with the most ridiculous, stupid gimmick. And then here you have Steve Austin pretty much just forcing the Attitude Era into this existing world.
Yeah, it was almost over the top here, where it was like everything had to be saying ass or using his middle finger.
Mm-hmm.
It was somewhat odd. Jim Ross's microphone, or his headset, kept cutting in and out, and he's pissed that McMahon's is working just fine as Vince laughs at the audio problems for Jim Ross. Now, this was almost kind of clever at the beginning, that you thought this was maybe some staged deal where Ross's stuff was cutting out. He remained on audio for like an hour with his headset cutting in and out.
Yeah,
and this
was
their audio equipment was worse than ours.
Yeah, it was like this. Like, this is what...
No, we can't hear you. We can't hear you.
What are you doing, John? Are you fooling with me? Are you messing up? Are you trying to? Is this funny to you? Is this like that? This is what we got for like a good hour into the show.
Now that was so annoying right there from 20 seconds. Now imagine an hour of a pay-per-view you spent money on listening to Jim Ross doing that. It was beyond annoying to me and actually ruined part of the show for me.
I wonder, though, if the workers were informed about this at all,
during their match. Like, if they were told before they went out there, guys, we're going to do this stupid thing on commentary while you guys wrestle. I wonder if they knew it. Because you know what? Because I noticed, like, I don't know if it was deliberate, but Triple H and Austin, they seemed to be wrestling a slower style of match, you know, with a lot of rest holds.
I got the impression this was a legitimate audio problem they were having.
No, it was not. Are you kidding me?
You don't think so?
Of course not. This was all for the angle. It started happening at the beginning during the on-camera when Jim Ross wasn't given a microphone, and only Lawler and McMahon had mics. And then once JR took a seat in the booth, his mic started to cut out. And then once Mr. Perfect would come in afterwards, all the mics were perfect. Of course it was.
Didn't Perfects fuck up at first?
No, never. At no point.
All right.
This was complete storyline.
Well, then that makes me even more upset because this was completely stupid.
Okay.
Completely fucking stupid. Both heels are Austin and Hunter, both heels at this point. The crowd was getting behind Austin. You could definitely sense that momentum even here in 96. The crowd was chanting Perfect at Triple H, and they were stating that tomorrow night, Mr. Perfect will make his return to the ring against Triple H in his first match in years. And at this point, I'm thinking, man, I wish we reviewed the Raw the next night because that's where everything important was happening. Bret Hart was coming back, and so was Mr. Perfect. And this was our pay-per-view we had spent $30 on. Jim Ross during this match started to point out how McMahon didn't know any holds, stating, "That was a wrist lock, by the way, McMahon." And then he pointed out a Greco-Roman knuckle lock to make fun of Vince's lack of knowledge. And I thought he was going to say, "That's not what we call a maneuver. That's called a Greco-Roman wrist lock." The annoying audio continued during this match. And as a result of this, they basically were ignoring the match in favor of the commentary. Crowd came down for this. Then Perfect came out to steal the valet wearing his ridiculously blue suit.
Yeah, his almost violet.
It was quite the suit. Then he got into the face of Austin, who backs off and then tosses water into the face of Mr. Perfect.
Yeah, in case you don't remember this angle, what this all led up to was Mr. Perfect. The next night on Raw, the match never ended up taking place because Hunter took out Mr. Perfect backstage. But we later find out that it was just all a ruse for Mr. Perfect to help Hunter win the IC title for Mark Merrow. So keep in mind, as Mr. Perfect comes out here to distract Hunter Hurst-Helmsley, the two of them are actually working together.
Yes. Hunter gets the advantage and goes for the pedigree, but doesn't hit it as he is distracted with Perfect and his valet leaving.
So how does that make sense? You're working with this guy. You're working with this guy who's supposed to be fake distracting you. Meanwhile, you have Austin in the ring set up for a pedigree that you could just hit and win the match with, yet you decide to leave and chase after this fake guy that you're actually working with?
This was dumb, because Triple H then went after Perfect. Austin chased him down the ramp and then gave him a vertical suplex on the floor, got back in the ring, hit the stunner, and gets the win. So I don't know what Triple H accomplished here with his partner in crime, Mr. Perfect. Austin's gimmick here is he used the middle finger and swears now against the wishes of the WWF, which occurs after the match. So yes, Way, a great point brought up there with the lack of any logic here between Mr. Perfect and Triple H, who basically outsmarted themselves, and Austin still won the match against these two who were conspiring against him. And this was the epitome of a Vince Russo storyline, and this was before Vince Russo was writing WWE television.
Okay, great.
Then we get a recap of the Smoking Guns angle, where they broke up with Sonny when they lost the tag titles, and Sonny and Billy were getting involved with one another, and then Sonny fires him.
Yes, and Billy Gunn, in this matchup, his sole focus is to capture the heart of Sonny. Meanwhile, Bart Gunn only wants the two of them to win the belt. So this was Billy Gunn's big singles breakout role. And it's hard for me to imagine Billy Gunn as just this young guy, because today all I can think of is just that weathered, grizzled man on the phone calls.
Yeah, I wonder if Sonny would have posted any videos of Billy Gunn when they got together. Oh, maybe when he was eating some fries and a hamburger.
Oh.
Anyway,
we should review those next some week.
No, we're not reviewing those. Next up, that's Owen Hart and the Bulldog with Clarence Mason defending the tag titles against the Smoking Guns. Ross's audio has now degraded into what sounds like a bad phone call or something over a megaphone.
Yeah, they put like a telephone filter on him to half fix it.
Bulldog in this match moves incredibly well for his size, which is probably 100 pounds more than it should be on that frame. Bulldog and Owen were frequently making tags as they worked over Bart Gunn. Sonny is backstage watching this match on the monitor. Then Bart runs into the ropes and knocks Billy to the floor, teasing problems between the two. Odd chemistry here when Billy was in the ring. He's playing heel against Owen and Davey, who are also heels, and Bart Gunn is the lone babyface in this match. And then the finish comes as Billy gets on top for their finish, which is called the Sidewinder, which is basically a guillotine leg drop off the top rope. It's exactly what America's Most Wanted, their old finish was,
right,
where one guy held the guy horizontally and the other hit the leg drop off the top. But Bulldog pulls Bart back as he's holding Owen. Billy misses the leg drop, and then Owen hits a spinning heel kick to pin Billy Gunn, and Sonny is shown clapping backstage, and Billy is very, very upset because he did not win the tag titles or Sonny.
He's depressed.
Then we see the WWE Superstar Lineway. Did you ever call into this?
Never.
Neither
did I. Know if it was available in Canada.
Yes, it was.
Oh, it was.
It was 1-900-737-4WWF, and they also had a Canadian number that they showed on screen.
Okay.
Raymond Rougeau was with Hunter, and Mr. Perfect was on the other line. This is amazing that people would phone in to hear promos.
I actually don't think I got this on the... I watched this online, so I didn't see this.
You got to watch the home video version, Way. That's right. The key. So and a big thanks to Justin Arthur, who sent us the online version.
And Jay Hunter for posting the links on the Facebook.
Yes.
So we do not officially condone any of that.
No, but we do accept them. Jim Ross then leaves the broadcast table abruptly. He gets into the ring to cut a promo on Vince McMahon for sabotaging his announce skills and brings up his two firings and trying to ruin his life. And he promises Bret Hart will be on Raw Live tomorrow night. Ross says that Hart is bringing back a shovel to bury some people, which is kind of gimmick infringement on the main event, and has some words for Vince McMahon and Shawn Michaels.
Getting back to your whole thing about Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle from Impact, I remember being a kid watching JR cut some of these promos in this character, talking about Vince McMahon, you know, as the owner and everything. And I remember just being completely confused about what he was talking about because I had no idea.
It was not common knowledge. Vince was the owner. Unless you were like following like the newsletters and
stuff.
Which,
the internet wasn't really around at that time either. I was just thinking like as a kid, I was just always thinking, why is this TV host angry at the other TV host? Because that's all I knew Vince and JR for.
Yeah.
It was just the announcers. So as a kid, I didn't follow this at all.
We then go backstage to footage from earlier tonight when Kevin Kelly is with Farouk, who is wearing this like Viking mask,
like a blue hockey helmet.
Ridiculous. And then they show clips of Ahmed Johnson. I'm pronouncing words like Ahmed did, and he's wearing this red and yellow leather jacket. I have no clue what this man said.
No, me neither.
He was like barking and made no sense. I don't understand how this guy was ever given a promo.
Yeah.
You couldn't understand a word he said. Then they cut over to Johnson holding a 2x4 over a downed Farouk to explain the injury that Farouk has suffered and that these two are going to meet eventually in a singles match.
All right.
Which would also lead to a great storyline where Ahmed would join Farouk in the Nation of Domination.
Whoa.
Talk about not making
sense.
What a
twist.
Yeah, yeah. No one saw it coming, Way. Because they believed these two hated each other.
Yeah.
Surprise.
That's what I thought. Wow, and they ended up being friends? What a turn of events.
If you ever attacked me at work to the point that I could not perform for X amount of months, nothing would allow me to join your group here at work.
What about respect? What if I somehow earned your respect in that beating?
How? By attacking me with a piece of wood? Can you even beat me with your own hands? You beat me down with wood and cost me a pay-per-view payday.
Okay.
And I'm going to join your group now. How humiliating would that be?
Well, different people have different motives.
I'm trying to think like these writers. Mr. Perfect then comes out with Jim Ross giving him some words and then joins McMahon and Lawler on commentary to watch the Intercontinental title match. Mark Maron's Sable, they cut a promo backstage. And Mark Marrow's defending the Intercontinental title with Goldust, and we have Sable in the corner of Marrow and Marlena in the corner of Goldust.
This shitty-looking firework rig comes down for Marrow's entrance.
Yeah.
And, like, when I saw it, like, all it was just, like, a real, like, metal piping. Like, they didn't even try to hide the piping at all. It was, like, fireworks attached to metal bars that they would just
drop down
from the ceiling. At first, I was like, why are they bringing a steel cage down? I thought it was, like, the bottom of a steel cage, but then these shitty fireworks just lit up.
This was weird. Mr. Perfect played the babyface on commentary, but he's acting like a heel where he's backing up Jim Ross.
Yeah.
Very slow and basic match between these two. I was actually not too impressed with this. Perfect was stating that Hunter is first, and then he's going after Austin. Mm-hmm. The truth was, he was going to WCW in a few weeks. Marrow then made a brief comeback with a cross body, but then walks into a clothesline by Goldust. Goldust grabs the mic, and he tells everyone to shut up and threatens to come out into the audience and put his tongue down everyone's throat. And Lawler states the only reason Goldust is here is because of the WWF's don't ask, don't tell policy.
Interesting.
That's horrible. Can't have those queers here in the WWF. Oh. That's basically what he said.
That's not what he meant.
That's what do you think don't ask, don't tell refers to?
That
way.
Is what he meant.
It's not a veiled
comment. You're not supposed to just say it like that.
Well, this led to a promo where Lawler called him a queer on television. Oh. So that's exactly what he meant by it. Miro almost gets a fall here after a moonsault from the top rope. Front row fan gets up out of his seat and is so upset that Mark Marrow did not win here. Like, just lost their bodily functions. Got up and went crazy.
This is a big match. This is for the IC title.
At In Your House. We see a back body drop to Marrow to the floor.
Maybe he didn't like those types of people. Like Goldust.
Maybe not. Maybe he was in favor of don't ask, don't tell. Mm-hmm. Perfect then gets up and tends to Marrow. Throws him into the ring as Triple H comes down to the ring and approaches Perfect. Goldust sneaks up and gets decked by Perfect. Then Marrow hits the Samoan drop in the ring and then hits the Wild Thing, which is a shooting star press, for the win.
Pretty nice looking.
Yep. Very good form from Marrow. Got height on that maneuver. Mm-hmm. He's like Justin Gabriel is like a modern day Mark Merrill.
Yes.
Which would make Kelly Kelly the modern day Sable.
Yeah. And?
Just stated.
Any other modern days? Make you the modern day...
We'll go back to the modern day Google chat, which was America Online. Jim Ross is with the fake Razor Ramon and the fake Diesel, now known as Kane.
See, I didn't get this either.
What did they even talk here?
I don't know. I didn't see that. I didn't see it.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I thought you meant I didn't understand this.
No, you literally didn't get this.
I
didn't get to see it. I saw the Coliseum home video.
Okay. Up next is a match that I hated. They had a video for the Battle of the Power Bombs. It's Sid versus Vader. Already, my interest was zapped.
Why is that?
Sid and Vader.
Okay, but Battle of the Power Bombs. I like that.
Okay.
I like that angle.
Bear with me, then.
I like these simple, natural feuds where you have two guys who... You know, for whatever reason, you share the same finishing maneuver, put them together in a match and have a feud over it.
Okay.
That is what I liked.
That's what you liked.
Now,
okay.
Let's get into
the I'm match. Saying I hated this match. They had Shawn Michaels come out. He was on commentary, and the winner of this match would get a WWF title shot against Michaels at Survivor Series next month. Sid is a babyface at this point, and he gets a gigantic reaction, and Vince notes that reaction. Then Shawn Michaels gets an even bigger pop coming out, as he wasn't even scheduled on this show. Michaels gets in the ring where Jim Cornette is standing. He takes his hanky out and blows his nose in it.
Mm-hmm.
Very much of a heel. Michaels, this was when he had hit, like, the most annoying voice in history. I just could not stand his promos in the 90s.
Yeah, I think it wasn't long after this that I stopped watching completely, just with Michaels on
because
top.
Of Michaels' promos.
And mostly just because Brett wasn't there, and I think as a kid, I think I was really disappointed. I mean, say, I really do understand when people say that, you know, John Cena shouldn't turn heel, or maybe like a Jeff Hardy shouldn't turn heel, because as a kid, you really identify with that top babyface, and if they're gone or if they turn heel, it really turns you off the product.
Especially if there's no one to fill that slot.
Yeah.
So, let's get into the match. Vader went for a Vader bomb, but Sid got his knees up, makes a comeback with a clothesline and a body slam as the crowd is behind him. He calls for the power bomb as Jim Cornette gets on the apron, but Sid catches him and crotches Cornette with the ropes. Sid delivers this really shitty-looking kick to the gut of Vader and goes for a power bomb, but Vader hits a low blow while the official is distracted. And Michaels notes, "I may have to steal that one come Survivor Series," which I took to telegraph as him giving away who was winning this match, but maybe not. Vader attempts the Vader bomb but can't get Sid up. Then comes off the rope. Sid ducks and hits a choke slam for the win. He hits a choke slam for the win in the battle of the power bombs.
In a battle of the power bombs, we saw no power bombs at all.
Why couldn't this match end with a power bomb?
I don't know. Maybe they couldn't lift either one.
Bullshit.
I don't. Yeah, maybe they couldn't. Maybe that was the reason.
You could have done Vader punching him in the corner on the second rope, and Sid would just have to basically move forward, and Vader takes a back bump.
Sure.
This could have been so easy. You're trying to heat up this babyface for the Survivor Series.
Yeah,
there is no reason to protect Vader here when Sid is your number one contender going into one of your big pay-per-views of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the way, the simplicity of the promotion, but the fact that they didn't even have the finish with the power bombs is kind of mind-boggling.
Michaels is in the ring. They go back and forth, him and Sid, and they go from friends, and then they become opponents. And then they shake hands as the pyro goes off for Sid's victory. So this setup of it, this was good. You set up your main event for your pay-per-view next month, and with the big question, is Shawn Michaels a miracle worker, and can he get a good match out of Sid?
Was that the question?
That was the question I had at the end of this. Doc Hendricks is backstage. This was awesome. He blanked on what the name of the pay-per-view was next month, and Vince cut in, cut him off, and finished his promo for him.
Wait, what happened?
You didn't see this, did you?
I think this was edited.
Oh.
This was cut out.
Doc Hendricks goes to, he's supposed to say the Survivor Series, and he just goes cold. He forgets the name of the pay-per-view, and then Vince is on the headset and just interrupts Doc Hendricks, and he finishes the whole promo that Doc was supposed to cut. Jim Ross then takes over for Hendricks backstage to interview Sid. It was a great night to be Doc Hendricks here. And Sid then outdoes Doc Hendricks. Did you get to see this?
I saw this. This was a classic Sid promo. It had everything.
Sid was so intense, was cutting this promo, and then he just went cold and forgot what he was supposed to say. Horrible promo from Sid.
This had everything you wanted out of a Sid promo. There was stuttering. There was loud, quiet, loud, and nonsensical, rambling subject matter.
LQL.
LQL.
Loud, quiet, loud.
Yeah, the grunge. The grunge delivery.
Yeah. Whereas Michaels had the up, down, up promo.
Up, down, up promo.
Because I'm talking like this, but sometimes I don't want to talk like that. This was awesome. Two great promos in a row for our show. And then we get a video preview of the Buried Alive match. Vince mentions this is the first unsanctioned match in WWF history, which begs the question why there was a referee and why this was occurring on a WWF event.
In the main event.
Yes, and they were making money off of this.
And they named their event after this unsanctioned match.
Buried Alive. This definitely could be legality issues here.
In the recap, we get to see the first Paul Bearer heel turn that they did.
If you didn't see this heel turn, just order Hell in a Cell from a few weeks ago, because it was basically the exact same turn.
Exact same thing.
Just substitute Kane for Mankind.
I thought there were some good promos, though, in this recap video from both men.
Yep.
Mankind and Undertaker.
They brawl to start the match, and Mankind is tossed to the floor, and the back of his head gets thrown into the barricade, which just looked terrible. Taker goes off the top to the outside, taking all the impact on his knees. And this was 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no wonder this guy is in terrible physical shape now. They battle up to the gravesite. Fans are into this match quite a lot early on. Taker hits a flying clothesline from the audience over the barricade to Mankind.
The gravesite is basically a mound of soil.
Yes. And a big hole with a they have gone out and made an actual gravestone with promoting the pay-per-view on it.
With the In Your House logo on it.
Imagine.
And the date.
Imagine going through a cemetery and seeing that stone there. In Your House.
Fuck. Imagine being buried next to that. That'd be awful. With like an etching of Mankind and Undertaker.
Mankind grabs this weapon. And did you identify what this object was? He starts stabbing him with it.
It looked like a plastic knife.
Yeah, it looked like something out of like a Fisher-Price playset. On the floor, Bear distracts Taker and Mankind hits him with an unprotected chair shot and then a knee to the face. Taker is then slouched against the steel steps and is taken back to the graveyard. Taker gets knocked into the hole but stops Mankind from shoveling the dirt onto him as both fight into the hole. Bear is then shown yelling, "Tonight he'll die. Oh, yes." After a DDT to a chair by Mankind, Taker makes his comeback with a chair and hits the leg drop to the chair on the face of Mankind. These two worked very well together at this time. I thought these two really complemented one another.
Yeah.
Towards the finish, Taker used the steps in the ring, hits the tombstone and signals to the graveyard and drags Mankind there. Mankind attempted the mandible claw, but Taker tosses him into the ground and begins shoveling dirt on him. The referee then declares The Undertaker the winner here, as I guess he had buried him enough with the dirt. Then Taker tosses the referees away to continue.
Well, how do you measure that? How do you bury someone enough?
I don't know.
Because what he had done was he tossed Mankind in there, and he started shoveling, but he didn't even, like, you could, like, he basically put, like, one layer of soil over top of the guy.
That's enough.
So wasn't
very decisive. He just had to.
How do you
didn't have to kill
that?
Him. You had to just bury him, and I guess the majority of his body was covered with soil.
It was covered with like one layer, meaning like his body still stuck out completely. He could still breathe.
I don't know why the referee got to decide when the unsanctioned match finished. So then Taker continues to shovel dirt onto Mankind until this masked man with a shovel attacks Taker. This was actually Terry Gordy, who would play the executioner. Mm-hmm. And he digs Mankind out, and they put Taker in the grave and bury him as the lights go out and lightning sound effects take over the arena. We see Goldust, Triple H, Crush, and Justin Hawk Bradshaw come out to help bury Taker. Fans toss garbage at the heels.
The lightning effects in the arena turn on, complete with sound.
And Paul Bear does an awesome job yelling here that he's gone. Lawler is laughing. Then the lightning sound effects come back, and a bolt hits the grave, and Taker's hand comes through the dirt and the grass. And
hold on, did a bolt actually hit the grave?
Some lightning came from the arena.
Yeah.
And Vince ends the pay-per-view yelling, "The Undertaker is alive! The Undertaker lives! He will not rest in peace!" The fuck was accomplished with this pay-per-view? If you had paid for this main event, what the hell did you get?
You got a man...
Very indecisive match.
You got a man buried in a pile of soil in the middle of a hockey rink.
I'm sorry. This pay-per-view sucked. They worked hard in the main event. Mankind and Taker worked hard. Austin Hunter didn't do a whole lot for me.
No,
neither did Mero Goldust.
It was just a background visual.
In Your House were just like so nothing events at this point in history. You'd occasionally get some really good in-ring matches, but in terms of storyline, they were
Mind Games was the pay-per-view right before this.
Yeah, one. Where Michaels and Mankind had that awesome match. Mm-hmm. But in terms of concluding storylines, they were just more... just extensions of
nothing.
Much more like what pay-per-views are like now, where the pay-per-views really don't wrap anything up.
Sure. And
I give this
maybe that's all they were meant to be.
I give it 2.5 out of 10.
2.5? I give it
the Jim Ross stuff annoyed the fuck out of me for this. These pay-per-views were only 2 hours, and half of it were with these audio fuck-ups.
Yeah. The thing about this show is just that nothing stood out to me. Good or bad. And
I wanted to watch Raw more than this pay-per-view. It was like TNA produced this pay-per-view.
Yeah. But you could have watched the show and not watched it and have had the same... It wouldn't have affected your life either way.
Yeah.
So I give this about a 3.
All right. Want to get into some feedback, Way?
Yeah, sure.
So we got a bit of it. We'll start off with Tom Mahegan. Pollock, you are right. Having West being excited, he means Don West, excited about the product instead of Taz, who just wants Vince to re-sign him for the Bucks, would be better for TNA. I disagree. I don't think Taz wants to go back to WWE at all.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of either.
Yeah, we discussed that last
week. Fillmore, just listen to the Melanie Pillman promo. Makes me sick to my stomach. Vince should rot in a hole for torturing this poor woman.
He should be buried alive. Yeah. That's what she's saying. He's saying. Lenny Wu, great way to end the show with Liger's music. Way is in quotations and spelled W-A-I. Sounds very 80s J-pop or something from an anime show with a happy face.
Chris Williams, don't know about you guys, but I'm not 100% taken by the review of Brock name. Was I the only one that instantly thought Review FC when a UFC review segment was discussed? He spells it REVIE-UFC. Mm-hmm. Review FC. Either way, keep up the great work.
It's a good name.
Yeah.
Navid Vafi. Hey, fellas, if this where the Guess Ways car contest answer should go, if so, then here we go. 2005 Nissan Maxima, possibly white. Great show, guys.
Nope.
That is not your car. This will be an ongoing contest. If anyone can guess the model and make of Wei Ting's car.
What is it? Okay.
You guys have now heard it on Review of Brock.
Are we going to... should we give clues? No. I don't even know
how. Four wheels.
Yeah, there you go. Aram Nasralla, thanks for another great review. I can't wait for In Your House 11. I heard the Austin Triple H match was really supposed to have been Triple H Mr. Perfect, but I can't remember what happened there. And Wei, as someone whose family comes from Iraq, I've never felt mad about any of their portraying of General Adnan or Muhammad Hassan or so on. I was just curious to see if others have felt the same way. But I felt the same way about lazy writing, because I felt the Hassan gimmick was interesting at first. Since it's October and it's fall, why not review a classic WCW Fall Brawl 98 where Scott Hall in a match, where Scott Hall was in a match where he was drunk and Warrior was in the War Games. Plus, if I remember correct, this was the pay-per-view where Bulldog got really injured. Since Wei is a huge rap fan, I had to tell that last week in the Juicehead capital of Denmark, my hometown of Aalborg, we had none other than Coolio performing at a small club. We had heard rumors of him coming, but nobody was sure. But now comes the letdown. We waited almost 2 hours for him to show up. And when he came, he had the biggest eyes ever and looked more high on coke than the situation. He did sing some of his famous songs, including Gangsta's Paradise. But it was mostly his backup singer that did the most singing. Coolio was clearly so fucked and couldn't stand straight. People were just glad to see him. It's not every day we get to see someone famous. He's also bald in the middle, but still has dreadlocks on each side of his head. Damn, he must really have been living hard the last couple of years. Were you a fan of his? I was not personally. Were you, John?
Not really. Like, I mean, that Gangsta's Paradise, when it first came out, that was like 95. That was like a pretty big song at the time. And then he had that other tune,
Fantastic Voyage.
1, 2, 3, 4. Get your woman on the floor.
Right.
That's all I remember from him. I was never a big Coolio fan.
Yeah.
Always dangerous when your gimmick is your hair, because that's not always going to be there for you.
Sure.
But that's coke will.
Wow, yeah. I didn't even know he was still doing shows. I'd love to see a photo, a present photo of his.
Denmark.
Someone wants to dig that up. Okay.
Jay Hunter, what about instead of Review and Impact, you call it Implosion, because it sounds like Impact and describes it too. You could prefix it with Paulo Ting Presents if you want to keep your names on the show. Believe me, we don't give a shit about our names being in the title.
I don't think so. Eugene DeHaan, Dia Dalby, fellas.
What the hell does that mean?
I don't know. You just wrote Dia Dao.
Dia Dao B. I have no clue what that
is. Fellas, have you ever thought of adding an occasional book review to the mix? I know reviewing a wrestling or MMA-related book is something that could only be done once in a while, as it is more time-consuming than reviewing a pay-per-view. I'm currently reading BJ Penn's book and have read a fair few wrestling and MMA books in the past. I was wondering what wrestling or MMA-related books that you fellas have read.
Actually, called us fellas.
Yeah, which ones you enjoyed and would recommend? Which ones you hated? And if there are any you're looking forward to reading, well, John, I've thought about it, and yes, next week we will be reviewing BJ Penn's book here on Review Away.
You're not serious.
No, I'm not serious.
You see, the problem with that is...
First of all, I don't think anyone of our listeners care. Secondly, it's a book.
It's very time-consuming to read a whole book in a
How
week.
Are we going
to
review... Like, the way we review these shows, we pretty much go through the whole thing.
Yeah.
It'd be tough to do that.
Yeah. In terms of books, though, I just finished Countdown to Lockdown. I enjoyed the book. If you like Mick Foley's style and have read some of his other books, then you'll like this book. Some people aren't as big fans of his, so you kind of know going in what to expect from Mick Foley, but I enjoyed it. I do have BJ Penn's book. I've also heard Brian Stan's book is really solid.
Oh, yeah?
So I'm planning to read that shortly as well.
I've really just mostly read all the very popular ones out there, like Foley's books, Jericho's, Brett's, and, you know, you've all heard about...
Brett's is probably one of, if not the best one. Yeah. I really enjoyed Pure Dynamite when it came out.
I enjoyed Jericho's book a lot.
Jericho's was excellent.
Anytime you just kind of get some real insight into the lives of these guys that you already know, and especially when they're commenting on events that you've already seen, matches you've already seen, it's always very interesting. So if you're interested in a guy, then pick up his book.
Yeah. Believe me, there's plenty of letdowns out there in the book. Like, there's been so many books that have come out that now there's only a handful that it's... that are really, like, you really have to work hard to make it a solid book. And that's kind of what Jericho did with his book and Brett with his, just because, I mean, fans are just, with all the information out there now, you can't just go and bullshit through a book. Like, people can cut through all that shit now, as you can probably attest to all of Hogan's books or even Russo's book.
Yeah.
Both horrible. Darren Bennett, hey guys, Way made a mention of the club he went to being like an Asian Jersey Shore. I'm assuming you heard they want to make an Asian Jersey Shore called K-Town, which sounds like a boy band name if you ask me.
Yeah, I
actually watched some trailer for it today that someone had posted on the wall. I don't know if it's a legit trailer for the show or what, and it's done to TikTok, but the lyrics are redone.
I refuse to watch this show.
Oh, I can't wait.
Is it even on TV or is it just an internet
thing?
They
don't list a broadcaster for it or anything, so I don't even know if it's happening or...
And it's produced by Tyrese.
Yes. K-Town.
I don't know. I personally have a real problem just even seeing Asian Americans on TV. It just makes me feel weird.
Oh, that's disgusting.
I'm just not used to it, and I don't know. I just feel like it's too much of a...
Very prejudiced of you.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Just white folks.
Yeah.
Is that what you want?
Let's cut out this part of the podcast.
No.
Let's redo the show. I hope we're not recording.
Oh, fuck!
Okay. Sorry, it's my turn, right? Alex R. Stephanie. Really, Santino fucking Morella in a pay-per-view match and Danielson probably won't even appear on the pay-per-view. It's like Vince is sabotaging his own company. I hope the company goes under.
No, did you catch any of SmackDown and what they did on Friday
what
night?
Happened?
As bad as the Santino deal was, and I ranted about that.
Oh, I did.
Yeah. Oh, Caval lasts 5 minutes with Big Show to get on the team and then gets beat by Tyler Rex.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Rex is going to be on Team SmackDown.
Yeah.
Fuck. They've given up on this pay-per-view. That's what I believe. I believe they don't care.
Caval
and Danielson. It's like, why even using them? Just fire them.
I think it's just Vince's way of...
You're so desperate to create stars, and you have people that the audience is behind, and it's like you're trying to prove them wrong for popping for these guys. It's just like, why are you employing them?
That's a very good question. I don't know.
Caval's been... As much as people will rail on how Danielson has been used, Caval has just been, he's dead on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
He has done jobs to Chavo, lost last week in a tag match, and to Tyler fucking Rex.
That's what you get. That's what you get for coming in with that indie cred. How dare you?
William Corliss. Listening back to Review Away, and Rhino had so much momentum after Bound for Glory 2005, and they had Jarrett win the belt back 2 days later, and he just sort of faded away. Yeah, that was the high point of Rhino's TNA run. Mm-hmm.
Jack Bisco, just saw the kids working a match,
as mentioned in Review Away October 10th. Apparently, they didn't get the WWE's message on don't try this. It could have gone horribly wrong. Best car angle ever? John interviewing Ariel Helwani while Wei is behind the wheel. Wish someone could use exciting GTA driving footage with the audio of the interview. Might be fun.
There you go. Someone creates it.
No, don't do
go
that.
Go for it.
Don't waste your time, please.
John Funk, I have a great WWF New York story for you guys. Back in 2001, I went to New York City with my then-girlfriend. Day two into the trip, we went to WWF New York, and I wanted to buy a WWF belt. This is maybe where the relationship ended. I go up to the counter where some shady guys were working and asked to buy a belt. The two employees pulled me aside and said, meet us around the corner in 20 minutes. Thinking this was weird, I risked it and met the two guys around the corner. I bought the WWF Undisputed title for $150 instead of $300. I got what I wanted, and they got their under-the-table tip from me. Thanks, guys.
Wow, nice.
That's very, very shady. I don't know if I would have met two strangers in a alleyway for a WWF Undisputed title.
Sounds like a wrestling angle where you're like, I'll buy this belt from you, but we'll have to do it in private.
It sounds like an episode of Cops that ends with a victim.
Did you ever buy one of these belts?
No.
No?
One of my buddies did. I didn't understand the belt craze.
They're fun to keep.
You ever buy one?
No, I never bought one. They're very expensive. But,
people buy them. You go to any live show and it's like, hey, look how many world champions there are.
All right. What's next?
Jeremy Levine.
Hey, guys. Great job on Review Away last week for Bound for Glory, especially considering the recording mishap. I'm a Jewish listener, but not Orthodox. The curly sideburns, fake or real, are known as paya. Paya are worn by some men and boys in the Orthodox Jewish community based on an interpretation of the biblical injunction against the shaving the corners of one's head. I live in Essex, UK. Currently, there is a new show in Britain called The Only Way In Is Essex. It is listed for 10 episodes and is the UK's terrible try at replicating a Hill/Jersey Shore-style program. It was given a huge build in the UK. I seriously think that this should be something you would love to review. It is complete shit and can be implemented easily with your wrestling terminology.
I don't know. I'm not doing a great sell job there for us to want to check this out. The thing is, it's like anything where there's something is super successful and you're going to get all the knockoffs after it, where it's impossible to capture what the first one did, because part of it was the first show of its kind to really get these people out there.
Mm-hmm.
Thulani, the Attitude Era was a success not necessarily because it was quality, but because it was different. For every great angle that you can mention from the 97 to 2001 period, I probably could give two other retarded and tasteless angles. Yet for all the dodgy stuff they did then, at least it was different, and that's what wrestling promotions today are failing to realize. TNA could have silly storylines, but at least if the dumb angles were original, it would make a whole lot of difference. I don't know. In WWE, 2002-2010 is this massive black hole where they only got a handful of historic moments and angles. They spent too much time trying to relive the Attitude Era that they missed the opportunity to create a relevant and original product in the 21st century.
I don't know. It's important to be different, but you have to be different in a good direction, an exciting direction. So, who knows? Who knows what would happen? Who knows if pro wrestling, even if it was so different, who knows if fans would even catch on?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I will say that I would say for sure for the last 5 years, the WWE has not struck me as a promotion that is moving forward and is forward thinking in terms of evolving their industry, but rather
evolving.
Yes, sure. But you know what I mean. But it's just,
well, it seems to me like over
these companies, WWE and TNA right now, it's going back to the past to see what worked then and applying it to today.
Yeah, TNA especially, but WWE, they're definitely going back to maybe like an 80s formula where they're catering towards the children with very fan-friendly storylines.
whereas TNA is mostly going back to the 90s with the hardcore stuff, with NWO.
The Horsemen. ECW.
Yeah. Oh, man. Just the whole show, really.
It's like a nostalgia show with the same people.
Okay. Ahmad Buttons just completed tonight's Impact. I have several thoughts. I would love to tap JWoww, despite, aka for the sole reason, her being a whore. Also, how wretched is this company? Immortal slash Fortune would be a great faction if you remove Abyss, Hogan, Bischoff, and Jarrett. Why can't this company just do it fucking right for once? The easiest and most interesting way for TNA to be a true alternative was to do this, in my opinion. A semi-shoot slash pride-style division a la Joe slash Angle in their Lockdown 2008 match, a vibrant X division that gets time to work, knockouts division, a great tag division, and your typical heavyweight main event division. In 2008, they had some of these hints of greatness and newness, so it could have definitely been done. You had LAX, Beer Money, Lethal Consequences, Motor City Machine Guns. You had Kong, Kim, Roxy, Love. You had Christian, Joe, Angle, AJ, Daniels, EY, Homicide, Petey Williams. But in 2010, they have Hogan, Flair, Hardy, Anderson, and no one gives one fuck.
Anyway, so that's our feedback for this week, everybody. We appreciate it, as always. And you can leave your feedback up on our Facebook group at reviewaway.com. That's reviewaway.com. Or just go search Live Audio Wrestling's Review Away Facebook group. And Way, we're coming to a close to the show this week. And looking ahead to next week, you are on deck to select what we review.
Yeah, let's do that. What is your favorite Halloween Havoc, John?
I don't know. Just pick one.
Halloween Havoc 1990.
1990?
Sure.
You're very bad at selecting these. Just pick a year. We've done 98. That was Hogan Warrior.
Okay, let me think. Let's do Halloween Havoc 2000.
We've done that one, actually, as well.
Oh, we have?
I think we did that one last year. Let's do... you know what? Let's do... because it's actually relevant to today.
Mm-hmm.
99 was the first pay-per-view when Russo and Ferrara came in.
Lovely. Perfect.
Do you want to do that
you're
one?
You're much better at picking these than I am. Yes, let's
Oh,
do
that's
that
not true at all. Are you fine with 99?
I'm great with doing that.
Because they had just started with the company. They did the Nitro going into this pay-per-view. That was their very first show, and this was their very first pay-per-view.
A milestone
all
in
right.
wrestling history.
And it features Hogan and Sting.
Whoa. Flashback.
But this was 11 years ago. Yeah. And today.
And JWoww was a mere... I don't know.
God, how old would you have been there? I was disappointed, everybody, this week. We almost got JWoww on the show.
Oh, seriously?
It was close.
Okay. Well,
but maybe in the future.
In the future.
So anyway, that's how we'll finish off today's show, everybody. We hope you enjoyed our review of In Your House, Buried Alive, and our thoughts on JWoww in TNA. Coming up, we'll be back on Tuesday with Review of Raw, as we will chat about whatever happens on Raw Monday night, taking place, Way, in Calgary, Alberta. I had no idea till I checked today that Raw is in Calgary, and Bret Hart is apparently supposed to be on the show, though they made no mention of that last Monday.
They didn't. No, they didn't at all.
So we'll see how that Raw goes, and then later this week we'll wrap up Review of Brock as we head into UFC 121, everybody. And going out here... I want to go out with Kanye West appeared on Saturday Night Live about 2 weeks ago, and he did two sets, and he did one with a rapper that you go way back with, Pusha T.
Yeah, from
and
the clips.
They performed Runaway.
Okay.
So I thought we'd go out with this.
And you also chose this because you thought it was relevant to this review.
Because why?
I don't know.
Because we're running away from something?
Because we're running away from the past. I don't know. This is trying to... I'm sorry, everyone. This is this is weird.
Let's go over to Kanye.
We'll talk to you next week. Look at you! Look at you! Look at you! Hey, hey! Look at you! Ladies and gentlemen! Ladies and gentlemen!
legs. The time and toes for the something wrong. You've been putting up with my just way too long. I'm so gifted at finding what I don't like the most. So I think it's time for us to have a toast. Let's have a toast for the douchebags. Let's have a toast for the
take work.